You're very warm and pleasant.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
Steve, you are.
I feel warm now, but it's an uncomfortable feeling.
You're warm and pleasant. No, you're both. You're both. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. This is the show. We're glad that you're here. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in.
Here's
some background music. We guarantee background music at some point during the show, not always at the very beginning, but you're going to get some at some point. Should be a pretty good show. There's much to discuss. But first, Steve, you just brought up a story in the news that I heard earlier today. I think most of Chicagoland did, and even Wendy's excited about this. The White Sox will be participating in a very special game at the Field of Dreams against the New York Yankees
next
year.
How about that? That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Now, explain this to me. I know the movie Field of Dreams. I know the field is a real field. Where is it again?
In Iowa.
It's in, you know, I used to know the name of town right off the top of my head. I'll find it, but it's in Iowa. Yeah, it's in Iowa.
Have you visited it, Steve? I have not.
Dyersville. No, I have not been there.
I know a bunch of people who have, and they say it's a very interesting experience.
I am shocked neither of you have gone.
I know. It's really
I want to go. You've never been either, have you?
No.
No.
It's a great movie, though. And
it is a good movie.
The question is, I don't think, I've seen a bunch of pictures of the field. It doesn't seem like it has enough space to have enough fans who would come to a game like this.
They're going
to
build 8,000 seats.
If you build it.
They will come.
It's true.
Right. They're proving it.
They're going to build a temporary ballpark there. And have the game, what did I say, August 13th?
Yeah,
August 13th.
And this is the first time a real Major League
game played there. Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
They have a team.
With living players, we've seen the ghosts there.
Right. They have a team that is based at that field that plays half of their games. It's a softball team. So they play half their games there in Iowa, and then they tour. They go to other cities. And a bunch of years ago, they came to Chicago, and they had them play the Chicago Media All-Stars, they called them. So it was people from TV and from radio playing against these guys that are all like college baseball players and former major leaguers and stuff like that. And their record was at the time, this is like 5 or 6 years ago, no longer ago than that, maybe closer to 10 already. So their record at the time was something like 89-3. They just didn't lose because they were playing a bunch of guys like us,
yeah.
You know? And the team I was on from Chicago came within, I think, a run or two runs. We almost beat them.
We came
very, very close. But then the consensus was on the in the dugout, I bet they lose all their game. They win all their games by a run or two. They always want the team to feel like they're in it. That's possible.
That's a defeatist attitude if I've ever heard
it. Steve, believe me, I didn't subscribe to that theory. I subscribed to the fact that we almost beat the Field of Dreams team. We came very, very close.
Almost does not count.
It's not. I know.
I'm sorry to tell you that.
I know.
Well, this is pretty exciting. And
how
can people go see this?
Bertrand Travel. You got to go through Stockholm.
Right. You've got to connect in Stockholm.
It's a weird connection.
Don't you have a Bertrand bus you can take off?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Right now, we only do Europe, Mary, but thank you for asking.
You're branching out, though, right?
Yeah,
at some point,
mm-hmm.
That'll be reality.
How come it's never been done before where a Major League Baseball
team
has
played? That's a great question.
And awesome that it's the White Sox and the Yankees.
The Yankees, I don't know how the teams were chosen. I have no idea how the teams were chosen. But they've experimented a little bit. They'll do a game in London or something like that. They call it growing the game. They want to show more of the world how great baseball is.
Iowans need to know about baseball.
Iowans don't know about baseball. So that'll change everything.
It's going to be like Lewis and Clark bringing baseball to Iowa.
That'll be fun.
All right, what happened 15 years ago today? Where were you 15 years ago?
15 years ago today?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, so
2004, where were you on this day in 2004?
Did something happen locally that was big or nationally? Locally. I don't know the answer to that.
I'll say
the world. Was Steve Bertrand born 15 years ago today?
He's not even here to hear it.
Oh.
I'll say three words, and you'll be able to guess what it was.
All 15
years ago today,
uh-huh.
Dave Matthews Band.
Oh, the incident where they poured the sewage, I guess you'd say politely,
they
onto
dumped,
a boat.
Yes. The Dave Matthews Band tour bus dumped hundreds of pounds of human waste into the Chicago River. And if you can remember where you were, hopefully you weren't on the architecture cruise that was floating under the Kinzie Street Bridge along the Chicago River. The bus driver emptied the septic tank, soaking tourists in what was described in the Chicago Tribune as, I don't want to say, a brownish yellow slurry. A slurry with the fringe on top.
Yeah.
More than...
yeah. I didn't hear that word until today.
I didn't either.
I'm glad I waited 15 years to hear that word, but it's accurate, I guess.
More than 100 passengers were on board.
Is that a flurry of sludge?
Day.
Is that why it's called a slurry? What is it? I don't know the derivation of that.
I don't know. I don't know, but that's what it was quoted as when the Chicago Tribune reported on it. So that's what happened August 8th, 2004. I have since taken an architecture tour. I forgot how great that is.
Yeah. But you made sure that Dave Matthews was nowhere near Chicago when you took the tour, right?
Right.
Right.
That will never happen again. They were fined.
A considerable amount, yeah. If I remember right. Yeah. And how do they justify that? I can't remember what they said had happened. Did they just say it was some sort of mistake? It was obviously a mistake. He wouldn't do that on purpose, I hope.
Yeah, I hope they didn't realize that there was an open bridge beneath them, and that's why they did it, thinking, oh, it'll just go in the water. No one will know. But my question is, do tour buses just open up the hatch and let it roll on, like, an expressway?
I don't know the answer to that. I've told you, though, I have a feeling it's human nature, not in everybody's nature, thankfully, but I remember I told you there was a day several months ago where it was really, really, really raining, and I said cars seem to be going out of their way. There's a street by us that it's three lanes of traffic in each direction, and cars seem to be going out of their way to be in the lane closest to the pedestrian so that they could splash them with water. And at first I thought, I must be imagining this. But then I thought, I'm not imagining this. I keep seeing cars swerve over to that end lane.
Yeah, but like we talked about this before, I can't believe anybody would intentionally splash a pedestrian.
You'd hope not.
It's just if you get over to turn right.
Yeah, it's almost inevitable.
Or left, I guess, in this case.
Yeah.
You have no other choice.
But I saw too many cars with the option of taking, now this is months ago, but because of the Dave Matthews thing, it's relevant. I saw so many cars that could have chosen the leftmost lane, the center lane, or the right lane, and they saw pedestrians and they saw the splashing, and yet they still opted for that left-hand lane. Very curious, right?
But the reason there are three lanes is there are two turn lanes,
sure,
and one straight. So
sure.
The driver of that bus, Stefan Wohl, admitted he dumped 800 pounds of waste from the bus.
800 pounds,
Good
let the record show.
Golly.
800 pounds. Wow.
I'm surprised the boat didn't sink.
That's an incredible amount. Like, you know how much is too much? A half a pound is too much. But 800
an
pounds,
ounce is too
that's
much.
Too much, right.
Although no one would probably notice if an ounce was dumped.
Right.
You're supposed to drain those things like porta potties?
I think you are, Mary.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I mean. You can't just release the hatch as you're driving.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't that the thing for a while with airplanes and that's what the blue ice was?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they aren't, I mean, what
right.
Do you think the delays are when they pull into an airport? Aren't they like going through their system? And
I think.
You can't just, am I piloting the thing?
Gotta get pumped.
He was sentenced to 18 months probation, 150 hours of community service, and the maximum fine, which was $10,000, which was paid to Friends of the Chicago River.
Who are they?
Not
Is that
Friends
just
of
the
Park.
Ecology
are...
group that keeps the area
yes.
hopefully clean. Shouldn't the people who were dumped upon have received some of that money, if not all of it?
They didn't really.
After you get 800 pounds of sludge on you, I think you're entitled to something.
Yeah, a bottle of Tide or something. I don't know. The bus, which reportedly was used by violinist Boyd Tinsley, was not occupied at the time of the incident. The Dave Matthews Band eventually agreed to pay $200,000 to settle a lawsuit filed by Attorney General Lisa Madigan. Just so you know, Wall never drove a bus for the band again.
Oh.
15 years
so,
ago
all right,
today.
There's some progress. There's some definite progress. I want to point out that later in the show, we talked about this during Crosstalk, we'll be having the author of a book about Charles Manson on. His name is Ivor Davis. Both you and I have an incredible interest in the Manson case.
I know, and there have been some texts after I said that. I know it's terrible.
Horrible.
I know it's tragic. I know that it shouldn't be glorified
right.
like it has been for
right.
over 50 years.
But he was one of the creepiest guys that ever existed.
Yeah. And it just was so unique and different that, you know, not like, oh, that's cool, but it's like, oh, that's terrible, but I'm still intrigued by
right.
it.
Right. A couple of years ago, I don't remember what led me to search for this online, but I did. I do remember, and I'll tell you why, because that's an even more interesting story. I was interested in Lynette Squeaky Fromm,
yep.
who was a Manson follower. And for those of you who don't remember, she tried to assassinate Gerald Ford at some point. So I was reading up on her, and again, I'll tell you why in a second, because it's a very, very peculiar reason. And I found out that she's released from prison.
Yeah.
She's out and about. And I thought to myself, how can that be? How can somebody attempt an assassination on the president's life, and at some point somebody decides, yeah, they're fine. I'm all for rehabbing in a jail. I understand that you can get better in prison. You can better yourself. But it just seems like that's one of those things that if you do, you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail. I always thought.
You would think that.
I always thought that. The reason I looked it up is this. This is the strangest fact in the world. I read the book about Phil Hartman. I can't remember the name of it, but there was a book about Phil Hartman's life and what a great life he had and the tragic ending that his life had. And he says in his book, he's talking about his high school years. He was talking about how he was the class clown in his high school. It was, I think it was called Orville Wright High School in California. Orville Wright High School sounds right to me. All right, so he's telling the story about how in his school and in most schools, every bracket of the most this or the most this or the most likely to this, there was always a male and a female, including his school. So he was the class clown of his class. The wittiest, which is the female equivalent of class clown, was Lynette Squeaky Fromm.
That's so weird.
They graduated the same year, and they both won the distinction of class clown or wittiest. Look at the different turns that those two had.
I don't think she was that funny.
I don't think she was that funny either. But now she's out on the street, so if you ever run into her, ask her about those days.
That is weird, because a lot of those people have come up for, you know, their parole hearings many, many times.
Yeah.
I can't
get rejected. Even Manson himself, every certain amount of years, stood in front of a parole board, and they asked him questions and then decided whether or not he should be released.
Don't you think that was a waste of time?
Pretty. It seems like a fairly easy judgment. Once you see the swastika on the forehead, you kind of go, we'll think about it, Charlie. Get back to us.
Now, I'm trying to remember, did he put that swastika tattoo on his head in prison? I thought it was before he went to prison, because there was an interview with him where he had it.
I don't remember the timing on it.
See, I shouldn't be as fascinated by this as I am.
It's just such a unlikely
story.
Everything about it is so unlikely. We'll certainly ask Ivor Davis when he's on with us, but many have said that if his music career went slightly better than it did, he would have not turned to being a cult leader the way he did. That he wanted so badly to be a musician and was so frustrated by it that his mind just took off on him.
I mean, listen, I would like to be a musician, too, but, you know, there are things that you can't do to get there, you know.
Right.
And, Bill, somebody else pointed out John Hinckley was released from prison, too,
yeah,
and he actually
shot
the president.
Right. But doesn't that seem...
He was in a mental institution, though. I don't know where Squeaky Fromm was.
I don't think she was in a mental institution. I think that was just a maximum security prison. But wouldn't you think that the act of trying to take out a president of the United States would be enough for them to say, well, you're going to jail for life. There's nothing we can do. You're done. You're in jail forever.
And
but it's not that way.
Wasn't he doing that to impress Jodie Foster or something? So that she had to be weirded out that he was released as well.
Yeah.
See, these are just... I'm sorry. You look at a car accident, too.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something wrong with me. But
maybe.
Well, I guess for other reasons.
Maybe. Well, do you know how now it's a big thing? You want to take an interesting picture and you want to post it on Facebook or any kind of media platform.
Instagram. Go.
Instagram.
Insta. Say Insta.
Instagram. You want to post it. You want to get a bunch of likes. That's what the world has become now. It's better to have a picture of something than actually live your life. You know this, right? There's a woman in Washington who was taking a picture of herself with an octopus on her face.
That's one of my dreams.
For Octopus Facebook. And believe it or not, she was injured.
Yeah, well, you know, that
sucks. Hard to imagine that, isn't it? Well, it literally does, Wendy. You're right. A Washington woman hoping an octopus on her face would make for a prize-winning photograph instead wound up with something she never expected, a face full of pain. Yeah, you wouldn't think that, would you? When you saw an octopus and you put it on your face, you'd never expect to be injured. Jamie Biscaglia told Fox News on Wednesday that she was participating in a fishing derby in the South Sound near Tacoma Narrows Bridge last Friday when a group of men in the competition snagged an octopus. Biscaglia, age 45, of Fox Island on Wednesday, recalled that the men for the juvenile Pacific octopus that they had snagged said, "We'd like to eat that for dinner." She also asked the men to take a photo of her with the sea creature, intending to enter the snap in the Derby's photography contest. She said, "It's soft, it's squishy, it doesn't feel like it can hurt you, and so I put it on my face." Which you would do with anything. Anytime you find something soft and squishy,
put it on your
face. Next move is, let's see how I look with it on my face.
Here's some pudding.
Well, pudding? Be honest, how do I look with pudding on my face? At first, it wasn't so bad, she said. The tentacles were squirming in my ear and my nose.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
And it was playing with me and my face, she said. And then all of a sudden, its beak... I didn't either. I know what you're thinking. I didn't either.
A beak?
Yeah.
Octopi have beaks?
Yeah. Well, a beak. Yeah, a beak. Well, yeah.
A beak.
A beak. And then all of a sudden, its beak entered my chin... And my eyes popped open wide, and they could all see that I was getting attacked, and the photos were taken at that moment while it was attacking me. The sensation was vivid. I'm still imagining its beak, because I've seen pictures of octopi, you're saying?
Yes,
is that the plural?
That's the plural.
Yeah. I've seen many pictures of the octopi. Never in any photograph of an octopi has there been a beak.
They do. Well,
they
it's,
do?
It's a mouth, but it's...
It's beak-like?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would just think, and I'm not one to put foreign objects on my face, but I would think that the worst that could have happened would have been, because of the suction, that it would have been tough to withdraw it, that getting it off your face would have been the problem. I didn't think that it would beak me. The sensation was vivid and unforgettable. Oh my gosh, she said. When it bites you, it feels like it's barbed, and if I pulled it out, it was going to take out my flesh.
Well, that's what you get for putting an octopus on your puss.
I know. Yep. No, you're right. When she finally pulled the octopus off, she said, the pain was intense, and the bleeding lasted for a half an hour. Still, she didn't go to the hospital for 2 days... just between you and me, a wise move. Why would you go to the hospital after something like this? She was determined to finish 2 back-to-back fishing derbies first. Between the derbies, she even went to a friend's house, cooked the octopus for dinner.
Calamari.
Yep. And enjoyed a beautiful meal that was so delicious. I got a little revenge, she said.
Jeez.
I know.
Can I just say, you know, like when an octopus spreads out all its tentacles and right in the center area, that's where the beak is. And it really does look like a bird's beak. It comes out and
imagine.
That's how it would eat.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's where its mouth is.
Yeah. Yeah. See, because I'm prone to think of the octopus that I know are always in like sci-fi, like Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. They're gigantic. This one, it was, well, like face-sized. It was like, you know, it wasn't gigantic. So you would think, what? This is silly, but it'll be a fun picture. I'm not defending her.
Did he look like, who's the one from Star Wars? Is it Admiral Akbar? Who's the one who has like squid
He's,
face.
Admiral Akbar, very, very good. Very impressive, Wendy. The next day, she competed in her second derby, but when she woke up, she realized that she must see a doctor immediately. I could tell that I couldn't swallow properly, and I could tell when I opened my eyes that it was kind of blurry, and the left side of my face and my throat and my glands were swollen, and it felt like my left side of my face was paralyzed, said Biscaglia.
Jeez.
Yep.
Do they have poison in them? Like a jellyfish or a snake?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. Days later, she said it was still hurting. Her face and her throat remained swollen. She also had a rash on her chin to show for her bid to grab the memorable photo. Biscaglia said that doctors told her the swelling could linger for months. And I have to take tons of medicine. There are 3 different heavy doses of antibiotics. I'm taking milk thistle.
You give a little thistle.
Give a little thistle, which is supposed to help with the venom. Do you keep milk thistle in your cabinet?
No, but I
in
can
your
just
squid cabinet.
Go to Fruitful Yield and get some.
They've got some. I go to Whole Foods. They've got the carob flavored milk thistle. It's delicious. Her takeaway, these are her words of wisdom, Wendy, please write these down. I would tell everyone not to touch something that they don't know what the consequences are. Shouldn't she have known that the day before this?
Everybody knows that, right? With an octopus. Come right. on.
Well, almost any sea creature. You know, like for years when we would go to South Florida in the summertime, there was a span of time where there were jellyfish all over the beach. And they're interesting to look at, but you wouldn't touch them. You know, you see things that are fascinating, but it's better sometimes to just look than grab, yeah. isn't it?
Earlier in May of this year, there was a Chinese internet personality, and she actually put an octopus on her face as well.
So this is a trend?
I guess. People throw around the word karma a lot whenever something bad happens to someone. It's here's a great example. A Chinese internet personality was being attacked by her would-be meal. The clip, which made the rounds on Chinese social media before spreading on Twitter and elsewhere, is somewhere between hilarious and frightening. In the clip, a girl who apparently goes by the nickname Seaside Girl Little Seven, if you want to follow her.
Well, that was going to be my CB handle, but they told me somebody had it, so I just got a different one.
She can be seen with a face full of tentacles after the octopus she was trying to eat had other plans. Oh. So she tried to eat it. First of all, here's the thing,
raw?
Too. Kill it. Alive, yeah. yes. Oh. And it attacked her and stuck to her face.
I'm not laughing, but I am.
I know. It's an octopus, people.
Right.
Would you put a giant tarantula on your face and then go, oh my God, it bit me?
There isn't wildlife of any kind that I would see and then just go, well, I guess my next move. I've now seen a bit of wildlife. I guess I have to put it on my face. That's my next move. That would never even occur to me.
And we're getting corrected. Well, you are. Actually, in the Jules Verne movies, those are both squids, not octopus, but they do both have beaks.
I didn't know that till today. I already knew don't put it on my face. But I didn't know that they had beaks. Didn't your mom tell you as a kid all the time, if you encounter an octopus, please, Wendy, please, do not put it on your face?
She didn't have to tell me that.
My mom used to drill us with that every morning. The first thing, she'd wake us up.
I'm very intrigued by them. I have a friend who has a giant aquarium
yeah.
with an octopus. They're really cool, but they're creepy and scary
yes.
and gooey.
Yes.
Like a parrot beak, and the reason they have it, according to 815, is they eat clams, so they have good taste.
Oh,
they'd have to crack
taste.
It open.
Yeah.
So I didn't know they had a beak. That's interesting.
Wendy, David Miranda filling in as producer today. David, you have some information about the octopus that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah.
And an octopus symbolizes diversity, mystery, vision, intelligence, illusion, and insight.
Yep.
But on your face, what does it symbolize?
Stupidity.
It is not intelligence.
Stupidity.
That you're kind of there.
Wendy, several texts have come in about our last story about the woman who thought it'd be a fun picture to put an octopus on her face, but then the octopus attacked her with its beak. Here's one. You missed the most important part of the story. Did she win the photo contest? It doesn't say in the account online, but that is the most important part of the story. So I feel embarrassed that I don't know the answer to that, but I don't. Here's another one. Calamari are squid. They are not octopi. Now, I have to confess, I can't, much like alligators and crocodiles, where you should know the difference, I can't at a second's notice tell you the difference. I'm the same way with squid and octopi and calamari. I know they're in the same general family, but to look at them, I don't know.
I think, and I always get this wrong, but with the alligator crocodile, it's all with their snouts.
Isn't one saltwater and one freshwater? That's what I thought it was.
I believe that too, but they look different. Like one has kind of a rounded snout and the other has more of a pointy one.
But you couldn't see one. Like if I showed you a picture of one and said, what is this, a crocodile or an alligator? You wouldn't know which one it was,
would you? If I could remember which has the pointier snout, and I always forget. I learned that when I worked at Brookfield Zoo. Now, I believe a squid is like an elongated, almost like a broom, and an octopus has that bulbous head with all the, that's what I think.
But Admiral Akbar, his breed of people was Mon Calamarian in Star Wars. So
they were Squidhead.
So I guess, well, Squidhead was a different guy, though.
Oh.
There was a guy named Squidhead, but it's not Admiral Akbar.
There was also a woman who had a bunch of, like...
Yeah, right.
Was it just two giant...
Like
tentacles?
Protrusions from her head?
Protrusions, that's what it is.
Yeah, that was the,
she was a
the Twi'lek dancer,
yeah,
was that who
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Squid and octopus are both aquatic animals with eight long arms. In addition to their eight arms, squid also have two long tentacles. They also have two fins on their head, unlike the octopus. An octopus has no hard shell or bone in its body. Squid have a stiff backbone-like structure called a pen.
Oh, I didn't know any of that.
I didn't either.
That's excellent. Can you do me a favor? Can we talk to Roger? Because he has a story that looks very intriguing to me.
All right. Squid talk.
Hey, Roger.
Hey, I love the show.
Thank you.
Especially when Bill makes Windy Belly laugh.
Oh, thank you.
That's every minute.
About 30 years ago, a couple of my classmates at the end of the school year were celebrating by having a refreshing smoke out in the country, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
And they found a snapping turtle and picked it up, and it was in the shell. And one of them decided to blow smoke in the shell, and predictable results, the turtle came out of the shell and grabbed his lip.
Good.
And had quite a time getting it off.
How bad was the damage? Was there a lot of damage there?
No, the turtle was needed some therapy. But one of my stalwarts had a V in his lip there for a while.
Yeah.
So wouldn't you agree with me, though, that a good rule of thumb is don't put animals that you don't know a lot about on your face? Isn't that a fairly decent rule?
And don't blow smoke in an animal's face. That's
also
another.
Solid.
As Gary Meyer used to say on this very station, wild animals are wild, hot coffee is hot.
Right. Common sense. So
thank
true.
God.
Roger, thank you.
We appreciate it. And Texter 773 says the difference between an alligator and a crocodile, one says see you later, the other says in a while, or after a while, technically.
That's true, too. A Texter wants to know if there's any way we could get Squidly Diddly on to talk about
this. I wish
we could. His number's unlisted.
That's funny, because you probably looked.
I tried to get Squidly Diddly.
Oh, he's not on social.
No, he's not at all. Very private these days, that Squidly Diddly. Wendy, a friend of the show has turned out to be a hero. This is very good news.
All right.
About 3 or 4 years ago, you and I had the pleasure of hosting actor Danny Trejo in the studio.
An interesting man. He is also, very few people do you hug. You're not a hugger other than your family.
I don't like to hug too many people.
And he is the third one. There was Stevie Van Zandt.
He needed a hug. I gave him a hug.
And Danny Trejo was the other guy, wasn't it? Didn't you hug him?
I did, yeah.
Weren't you shocked at how unbelievably pleasant and nice he was?
And so huggable.
But you don't hug anybody.
For people who don't know who he is, he's most famous for the Machete movies. He's been in so many movies. He's the guy, if you're casting a movie and you need to cast the meanest looking guy in prison,
right?
You always get Danny Trejo. He's the guy that even the toughest of tough guys see this guy and they go, I'm out. I'm not messing with this guy under any circumstances. And then in real life, he's the nicest man in the world. He's such a nice man. And like I said, I don't know what came over me.
I don't either.
He was there, I was there. We both went, come here, you, and we gave each other a big hug.
And little Steven as well, you hugged. And there was one other person.
One other unlikely person. There's other people that I've hugged over the years, but there's only been a couple people that you've went, did you just hug Machete? And I go, yeah, I did. And I'd hug him again if he came by. Well, he did something very nice in the last couple days.
He deserves a hug after this
story. After this, he deserves a hug. Actor Danny Trejo played a real-life hero when he helped rescue a baby that was trapped in an overturned car after a collision at a Los Angeles intersection. Authorities said the two cars crashed on Wednesday. Video from KABC-TV shows Danny Trejo at the crash scene. Trejo said he scrawled into the wrecked vehicle from one side but couldn't unbuckle the child's car seat from that angle. He says another bystander, a young woman, who so far I have not hugged Wendy, helped out. Together, they pulled the baby safely out of the wreckage.
That's amazing.
The Los Angeles Fire Department said three people were taken to the hospital. There were no life-threatening injuries. The 75-year-old Trejo, did you know that?
Mm-mm. He's in great shape.
Wow. He's made out of rock. He's 75. Who is an L.A. native, is best known for playing the character Machete in the Spy Kids movies, but then later they spun that off into his own movies, Machete.
Machete was from Spy Kids originally?
Yeah, at the very beginning. A guy named Roberto Rodriguez is the guy who writes and directs all those, and they're friends. So, yeah. Wow. But it's funny because those movies started out as being very kid-friendly.
Yeah. Machete is not.
And then they're not that kid-friendly anymore.
I find that shocking that that's what spawned Machete was Spy Kids.
Right, right. Do you remember, did he initiate the hug or did I initiate the hug? That's the part I can't remember. But if he was coming at you in hug form...
You can't turn him down.
You couldn't say no, right? That would have been the rudest thing in the world to do to Danny Trejo.
I know with one of them, you said, can I hug you? It was just weird. There was one other person, too, that was just...
There was another surprise hug that even I went, I just hugged that guy. But who was it? But we've had other guests who are more...
You're not a big hugger. I mean, you know,
right.
If someone comes in, you would not, like, go to them and hug someone. I'll hug anyone who will have
yes.
me.
Yes. And sometimes people who have asked you to not hug them, you'll hug them.
I'll still
during
hug
the
them.
Interview, you'll go over and just start hugging them. And I'll go, Wendy, you got to pace yourself with the hugs.
I'm a hugger. You have brought to everyone's attention that you like to hug your family members. That's pretty much it.
But now there are people here in the office who, upon going for a hug with me, will back away
yeah.
and say, oh, I forgot. And I'll go, no, you're okay. You're on the list. I keep a list
yeah,
in
right.
my wallet.
I know you do. Was it Michael Rooker?
I did hug Michael Rooker, but I didn't think, was that one a surprise?
No, but he comes across as pretty rough
yeah.
and tumble as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are the guys I hug.
The rough and tumble guys.
I hug the rough and tumble guys.
Will Steven.
Yeah.
Michael Danny Rooker Trejo,
right.
and Danny Trejo.
Three tough guys.
I can't remember.
Because those are the guys you want, if you're me,
right.
you want to create a bond, a friendship, so that if there's trouble, they know that we're, you know, we're on the same side.
Guess who Bill hugged? It's a new contest because people are actually texting in.
Are people guessing?
You hugged Don Rickles, but that was out of sheer respect and love.
There's in my, now this one's not written down in my wallet. This one's in my brain. There's a bunch of people over the years that I've admired so much that if I meet them, if I'm ever lucky enough to meet them, I can't help myself, and Don Rickles was at the top of the list. But with him, remember I asked his permission when you and I were on the air with him, and then when I met him the next night, I did hug
yeah.
him. Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. You have to ask now a day in advance before you can hug someone.
If Dick Van Dyke or Bob Newhart ever walk through that door, they're getting a hug the second they come into the room. That's
Would you
it.
Ask?
No.
What about Danny DeVito?
Danny DeVito I might hug.
He just looks so huggable.
Yeah, he's very huggable.
Isn't he?
Yeah, I would probably hug Danny
DeVito.
He's
a dirty old man, and I love him.
Oh, well, yeah.
He is. You brought him up. We were talking about something, Ashton Kutcher, and it's like you said, you know, if – I don't remember what it was, but you said if –
There's some people who are easier to deal with because they're attractive.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Because
right?
you said, you know, if Danny DeVito came up to you and tried to kiss you, you know.
Scream.
No.
But if it was Ashton Kutcher, you'd go, all right. Right?
Now it's Kutcher. You say his name different every time.
Ashton. I just call him Ashton.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I have to admit, I have this fascination with the Charles Manson murders. 50 years ago tomorrow is when it happened. And there's a new book out, Manson Exposed, A Reporter's 50-Year Journey into Madness and Murder. And the author of that book is on the line with us right now, Mr. Ivor Davis. Hi, Ivor. How are you?
Good morning to you in Chicago. I'm terrific. Thank you.
We were looking so forward to talking to you. I will openly admit it. I am fascinated with the whole Manson family and the murders, and it's terrible to say that, but I'm not the only one. And the new Quentin Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, has a little bit of that in there as well. We're all fascinated with this terrible case, aren't we?
Well, we are fascinated, and the movie is also fascinating. But, you know, can I just refer to something you were talking about a few minutes ago about hugging? Because Charles Manson, in his armory of pricks, had one very good effort that he did to disarm people who were scared of him. He went up and he kissed their feet. I don't know if that would be considered non-thing to do, but kissing the feet was a Manson trick that actually disarmed people and made them think, well, this guy is quite nice. And that was part of Manson's kind of Machiavellian method in which he entranced all the women and got everybody to do his bidding, including, as you said a moment ago, the horrible killings 50 years ago this week.
I have to say, Ivor, of all the things I know about Charles Manson, that doesn't even crack the top 100 creepy things about him. It's creepy, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't even crack it.
Yes.
I have to ask you this. You covered the case originally 50 years ago. What was it like to just flat out be in the same room as him? Was that eerie to be that close to him?
Yes. I mean, Manson was a performer. I mean, he wanted to be a rock star. He never made it as a rock star, but he made it as a monster in criminal history. But in the room, he would try and give his evil eye to particularly women. He would stare at them during the trial until, it was kind of weird. And then, of course, Manson behaved like a crazy man. I mean, he jumped at the judge with a sharp pencil, screaming, "Die, old man." And every time he appeared in court, it was a circus act. And every time he appeared in court, the girls charged with all the murders would mimic him. They shaved their head, they carved swastikas in their forehead, and they just sang and behaved in a very non-judicial manner.
We were wondering earlier when the swastika was carved into his head, was that prison? But that was done for the first trial, correct?
It was done for the first trial, and I wondered when he showed up with the swastika in his head how he did it and how the girls did it. And then one of the jailers said, well, they did have bobby pins, although I don't know whether Manson had a bobby pin. I mean, that's very American, bobby pins, but apparently you can heat the bobby pins up and you can use them to brand yourself. Another little trick that who the hell cares about that, but there it is.
Ivor, you just described Charles Manson's behavior as theatrical. How much of it was an act? How much was it him acting crazy, and how much was it just him being crazy?
I think he really was crazy. I mean, he was a sociopath, a psychopath, all those kind of psychological terms. But he knew what he was doing, and he decided that the judicial system, the trial, was going to be his theater. It's going to be his stage. And not only did he do that, but you guys probably remember, over a 20-year period, Charlie Manson was the dream guest to have on with Diane Sawyer and Tom Snyder. So
yeah.
Charlie played the media. I mean, he loved it. He loved going on and being the monster in person, but he was safe. People could watch him without worrying he would invade their living rooms. And Charlie became a big media star and a star, bigger, more famous than Jack the Ripper.
So you were actually at the murder scene. I bet that's a day you will never forget.
I will never forget it because we didn't know what had happened. I got there. There was kind of frenzy. There was gathering media. The cops were telling us nothing. But I was very lucky because, believe it or not, by pure chance, a friend of mine lived three doors away. So I went to see him, and he said, Sharon Tate lived there with Roman Polanski. And for the first hour or two, I thought Tate was murdered with Polanski, but of course it turned out to be Polanski was in England, and Sharon, 8 months pregnant, died with her friends Jay Sebring, Wojtek Frykowski, Abigail Folger, and one young guy called Stephen Perrin, who had nothing to do with anybody, was at the wrong place at the wrong time. He got shot dead. So it was also a bit crazy, but it was a memory that I will never forget.
Ivor, a couple months ago when Doris Day died, we talked about the connection of Doris Day's son to Charles Manson. How exactly did that come about, that connection?
Well, in a nutshell, Doris Day's son, Terry Melcher, was enamored and almost obsessed by Charles Manson. He met Charles Manson at Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys' house. Charles Manson wanted a record contract. The two got along very well. And then finally, after one or two auditions, Terry Melcher said, I don't think so. Manson was very upset. And Terry Melcher thought that Manson had sent the killers out to kill him. Because don't forget, Sharon Tate lived at the same house that Terry Melcher lived. But Terry Melcher had moved out of the house 4 months earlier. So there was an idea that Manson went out to kill everybody at Cielo Drive in Beverly Hills, thinking that Terry Melcher was there. But then I learned that he knew Terry Melcher was there, and he did it for a different reason.
Did Manson ever kill anybody by his own hand, or did he convince other people to do his killing?
Most of the time he had underlings do his killing. But he thought he killed a drug dealer. He shot a drug dealer called Bernard Lotsapopper Crow in a drug deal gone bad. He shot him in the stomach. He left thinking that Crow was dead, but Crow was not dead. Crow was rushed to hospital and survived. But Manson did, he did orchestrate murders of other people, including, I think, the death of Ronald Hughes, who was a lawyer defending Leslie Van Houten. So he didn't do it by his own hand, but he certainly had other people follow his orders.
We started out this interview with Ivor Davis and the new book, Manson Exposed, A Reporter's 50-Year Journey into Madness and Murder. We started the interview with Helter Skelter, and that was allegedly what inspired Charles Manson to do the killings. That is not true, is it?
No, that is not true. I mean, my research from day one showed that Manson did indeed brainwash his followers to believe that the Beatles' lyrics from all the songs in the White Album, including Helter Skelter, were messages, secret messages to Charlie, telling him there was going to be a race war. I mean, in the light of today, that's outrageously ridiculous. It still is. However, they prosecuted on that basis, and they were successful in getting convictions of everyone. But so in other words, Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor, you can definitely say that the ends justified the means, and he got a conviction of Manson, who was guilty of orchestrating these murders.
Our guest is Ivor Davis. This is such a great book, honestly. Ivor's put together a book called Manson Exposed, A Reporter's 50-Year Journey into Madness and Murder. Ivor was there himself. He knows the story inside out.
Your first book was written before the trial even happened, and that was called Five to Die, and the Los Angeles prosecutors actually used this as a blueprint for the trial, and you interviewed Charles Manson as he was arrested. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the strange thing was, I never learned until many years later, after the Helter Skelter Beatles Made Me Do It motive work, that they'd taken my book in 1970, which I wrote before the trial, and which I wrote as a result of a visit over several days to speak to Manson devotees, who told me the whole crazy way that Beatles was inspired, if you like, by the Manson was inspired by the Beatles. So, I mean, basically, watching Manson do his thing was just outrageous. And I sort of lost my thought on the second part of your question, Wendy. Just give it to me again, would you?
Well, just the interview and actually speaking with him. You know, I've read the books. I've seen plenty of interviews. I, as I mentioned before, am fascinated by this. But there's some new information in your book that people have never heard before. Tell us about that. Give us a few tidbits.
Basically, there is so much going on in this crazy story. For example, Roman Polanski, who was the tragic figure, the film director, the Oscar-winning film director, who was married to Sharon Tate and who was expecting his first son, and of course the baby was also killed, he came back to L.A. and wondered, is this the work of some of my showbiz friends who want revenge on me for some reason? And so Roman Polanski became a detective. He went to his friend's house with police giving him some blood print examination equipment, and he went around secretly looking for blood stains in people's cars. He looked for weapons. He was so obsessed by finding out who did it that he became a little bit obsessed himself. And then, of course, it turned out that none of his friends were involved in one iota in the murders. So that was one element. The other element is that Manson somehow was able to get people to do incredible things. I mean, one of the stories is Dennis Wilson, the drummer of the Beach Boys, who picked up a couple of Manson hitchhikers, came home 24 hours later, and Manson had moved into his house, a mansion on Sunset Boulevard. Dennis and Manson got on very well with drugs and sex and rock and roll. And Manson took over his mansion and spent about $100,000 of his money.
Jeez.
And And he was in broiled poor Dennis Wilson, and Dennis Wilson promised to help Manson make a record, but it didn't work out.
What do you think would have happened if Charles Manson got his recording career?
Here's what would have happened. Number one, you and I would not be talking today. I honestly believe that Manson wouldn't send out his people to rampagingly murder senselessly all these innocent people. He would have been a rock star of some order, because people like Neil Young liked his music. Neil Young said, believe it or not, he's kind of like Bob Dylan. So if Manson had become a rock star, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Ivor, I want to draw a very strange parallel for you and see if you notice what I've noticed for years. If you look at vampire movies of that era, of the 1960s, specifically the Christopher Lee Hammer movies where he's Dracula, there's the same sort of relationship between the vampire and the women around him, his minions around him, as Charles Manson had to the women who followed him. Do you see that same parallel?
Well, that's a very good observation, particularly, I mean, not too many people remember those movies, to be honest with you, but they were very indelible on your mind, believe it or not. Yes, Charles Manson was a vampire. I mean, he didn't suck blood, but what he did do was he fed the girls drugs. He was their boss. He was their dictator. Everything he told them to do, they did. And they, in a way, he did suck their blood, now that you and I are talking about it, because he ended up monstrously getting them to do the kind of things that normal human beings would never, ever do. He got them to do it. So he was also, among his many faces, definitely, definitely a vampire.
Interesting. Did most of his followers, most of his disciples, eventually denounce him? That happened over time, right?
It did. I mean, Leslie Van Houten, who is still trying to get out on parole, Patricia Krenwinkel, who were the girls that were participated in the Sharon Tate case and in the LaBianca murders, they have been model prisoners. They've been helping other prisoners. They are desperately trying to get out on parole. Susan Atkins died in prison, and unfortunately, the girls probably will never get out because it's a political issue. But, and I must add this, there are girls around today. I mean, they're not girls anymore. They're old women who still think Charlie is Jesus Christ, and they still think Charlie is to be worshipped. So it's scary, but they're around today. They're old ladies, but they still believe in the life according to Charlie Manson.
This is a fascinating read. A great job on this. Manson exposed a reporter's 50-year journey into madness and murder. I know it's a fascination of many, and I feel guilty for being interested in this case. And I have sons that are 16 and 20. We saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that's just kind of opening up their eyes to try and find out more. So this is a great book. I can't recommend it more. The best place to get it, Ivor?
The best place to get it is on Amazon or on my website, ivordavisbooks.com. Wendy, what did your kids think of the movie?
They loved it, and I enjoyed it very much myself. I did not know there was really going to be any mention of the Manson case in it. I went into it blindly. I really enjoyed it. Your thoughts on it, Ivor?
I enjoyed it, too. Enjoy is kind of a funny word.
I know, I guess.
It was engrossing. But when I went to the Spahn movie ranch, I mean, that scene at the movie ranch was creepy. It was kind of Village of the Damned. But don't forget, Wendy, this was a fairy story. And the only thing is, if young people go into the movie thinking this is what happened, they're going to be rudely awakened.
Yes, and that, you know, you need to go and check the history behind it. But as for a movie, it was quite a fascinating story. I'll say that.
Absolutely.
Ivor, thank you so much. It was great talking to you. And again, Ivor's book is called Manson Exposed, available wherever books are sold. Take care of yourself, Ivor. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bill.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys, Dean.
He's Dean, Bill.
He is Dean. There's no, you can't even argue it. He's Dean Richards. Hi, Dean.
I've got the documentation to prove it.
You have it written down?
Yeah.
All right.
So, there's a lot of Dean Richards birther movement going on out there. I am an American citizen.
Yes, you are. Some would say our greatest American citizen.
I don't know anybody.
I don't know.
No?
I don't know anybody who would
Thought
say
Thought I'd try
that.
It. All right, that's fair.
I'm hanging on by a thread.
Do you know if this is true or not? I saw this online.
It is true. Yes.
How about that? Did you see that coming? I didn't.
I can. I've been an interviewer so long, I can anticipate the questions even before they're
So you
asked.
Knew it was outrageous. Apparently, Milo Ventimiglia from This Is Us wants to be the. He wants to be the new Batman, Wendy, or Bama, as you say.
And why do you say that?
I don't know. Wendy speaks with a foreign tongue.
Fancy?
I don't know. So apparently, he wants to be Batman, and he approached the producing team, and they said flat out, "You're too old to be Batman."
I would think that. I don't know how does he compare in age to a Christian Bale, Val Kilmer, George Clooney.
He's 42 years old.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah, Keaton was older than that when he was Batman.
No, I think Michael Keaton was younger than that. Not by much, but a little bit younger.
How old is Milo?
He's 42.
Yeah, that's a little long in the tooth.
He has a lawsuit there. I'm sorry, that's ageism.
Well, maybe if you're the producers, you're looking at not just one movie, but thinking hopefully if he's good at it, he can play Batman for years to come. And then maybe as he's approaching 50, maybe that's not what they have in mind for Batman. The guy they chose, Robert Pattinson, is about 10 years younger. He's 33.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying that either.
I don't at all.
No.
I don't think he's going to be good.
Unless they're, you know, it's like a new, like, goth Batman.
Oh. Oh.
Like a Batman for a new generation.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, I don't know. I don't.
He could play Batman. He'd be a good Batman. A tear-jerking Batman.
I'm not sure I want anyone who was in the Twilight franchise to be a Batman.
No?
I have a philosophical problem with that.
And Dean, can you confirm or deny this report? We got a text a little while ago. Wendy and I have discussed on several occasions the fact that we don't have CBS anymore. There wasn't a deal between the cable and satellite company and the CBS network. But we got a text a very short time ago saying CBS is back on.
Yeah,
do we
it's
know
been
if
all
that,
over the news.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
A multi-year arrangement.
While my television set only gets WGN. and I have, I don't even know what this Channel 2 is that you're talking about.
The home of Big Brother, that's all I care about.
I don't know. Actually, Stephen Colbert's there, so I'm a big fat liar, so because I do love that. Yes, they did, they cut a deal, was it with DirecTV, is that who they were?
It was AT&T, Uverse, and either DirecTV as well.
Whoever there was a blackout, there was some financial disagreement, pretty long time, a couple of weeks, I think. That took CBS off of those systems, and this morning, I think it was around 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock. They announced that all is happy again.
Everybody's happy, but isn't AT&T and CBS owned by Mrs. Paul's Fish Sticks? Isn't the same parent company? Is that a separate company?
I don't think so. CBS
I thought they were.
Isn't CBS now
a Tandy company?
You mean from Radio Shack?
Yeah, yes. Same people as that.
Wow.
Or Beatrice.
Hasbro.
Hasbro
Does
might own them.
Hasbro now
I think
own
they
them?
Have a
Mattel?
Hand in it. Yep.
I think CBS is now, is it the company called Entercom?
Oh, that sounds right.
I think.
Yeah.
CBS was recently acquired by somebody. I don't know.
But shouldn't we live
Who
in fear?
Who can keep track?
There's too many companies. But for years and years, whenever you'd get a notice that Comedy Central might pull out or a news source might pull out, they would always come to agreement like the day before.
Right.
In this case, I've been without CBS, I think, for 3 weeks.
Yeah, they were playing hardball with
this.
I can't remember blackouts lasting
this
long. No, it's been like a couple of days in the past.
We've had in our very own company, the Tribune Media stations, be blacked out by different cable systems around America.
Really?
Similar arrangements where, I don't know, I don't completely understand it. There's rebroadcast transmission fees.
Yeah.
Something I've heard people drop those terms, and I have no idea what any of that means. But there were financial, you know, for a local TV station to provide programming to a cable or satellite service, they have to pay a retransmission fee,
sure.
I guess is what it is. And
sure.
That's what was in dispute in the case where the Tribune stations were blocked or dropped from lots of cable channels, resolved. But that's what happened, I believe, with the CBS stations and their cable and satellite services.
Yeah. It just shows what I said in the beginning. We need an older Batman, don't you think? That would solve all the problems.
The Batman, there's, you know, if you had a good Batman, a good mature Batman,
right?
He would have never let anything like this happen.
Remember when Abe Vigoda played Batman and people at first were like, he's too old to play Batman, right. But then he showed us?
Yeah, you could see the Depend undergarments under the tights.
Right. I remember that, sure.
To the Batpole. I'm coming.
Give me a minute. I can't get there so fast.
Gets out of the chair.
Right. There was a lot of groaning. Wanna go get it down. You are coming there. My mother's a world brand now. So good you won't believe.
Oh, oh, oh. All right. Some people, they got the big brains. They make up the computer games. Some people.
What is this? David Miranda is filling in for Jasmine.
This is from Dora the Explorer.
This is up and hipped up.
Yeah. That's it. Dean Richards is our guest. He will tell us if Dora is a good one or is Dora a snora. Let's find out.
If Dora is a Bora.
Does she light the menorah?
And I can think of one more, but I...
No, don't do it.
Yeah,
I know which
do
one.
Not.
Don't do it, Dean.
And no, she's not.
She dances the hora. Is that what you wanted to say?
I forgot. I was at a wedding with her.
Yeah. She dances the hora. That's all.
We did the Hava Nagila, and then she did the hora.
Lights the menorah, dances the hora. It's Dora the Explorer. What'd you make of this?
Did you guys grow up?
No.
Right,
not anytime soon.
I want to because we have producer David Miranda here today. Is he nearby?
Yeah, he's right there.
I'm right here.
Because I have been coached for the last several days on how to pronounce the name of one of the stars in the movie. He is the biggest television and movie star in Mexico.
Eugenio Derbez.
What? Say it again, David. I'm sorry.
Eugenio Derbez.
I was going to say it.
Oh,
say it, Dean.
Well, go ahead.
How do you say it?
I was going to say it.
Say it.
No, it's
say it. You can't.
Eugenio Derbez.
Oh, there you
That's
go.
Pretty good.
Ana Belaval has been yesterday, literally a half an hour. She was like, it was like the rain in Spain.
Falls mainly on the planet.
Yeah. What's that movie? I can't think of
My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
It was like My Fair Lady, Anna trying to teach me how to say the name of a man, of a person.
Dean, did you think...
Eugenio Derbez. He has been chosen the most popular star in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And now he's making a transition into American films, as he puts it, but with Michael Peña and Eva Longoria.
And Milo Ventimiglia playing Dora the Explorer.
And Isabella Moner is actually her name, who plays Dora in this movie. It's a kid's movie. It's an adaptation of the animated series. It's cute. To me, it was a little bit corny. But it's harmless, and I think, you know, kids, especially if you grew up with Dora, that you're going to find it adorable. To watch. I gave it a Dean's List C, but mostly I like it because I've learned how to say
Eugenio
Derbez.
When you're reviewing a kid's movie, are you adult Dean, or do you become kids Dean, knowing the movie is intended for kids?
I try to see it. In a way that I know this movie is not intended for an audience like me. And by the way, this was one of these movies I've often talked about where I went to a Saturday morning matinee, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I was the only adult by himself at this movie. It was all
Pee-wee Herman was sitting next to you.
That's what that was. So I felt a little creepy being there, but I have to separate my own personal taste, as I do with most movies.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have to separate my own personal taste from what I think the filmmakers were intending and who the intended audience is. And this, it's a rated PG. It's for a younger audience, and it's perfectly harmless and perfectly, you know, pleasant. There are a few laugh moments in it. There's, you know, the obligatory in any children's movie scenes about flatulence.
Oh, that's always good.
That is required in
sure.
any kind of movie like that.
Yeah.
So, pleasant enough, Dean's List C.
All right, not so bad. What about Brian Banks? What is that?
Brian Banks is a true story about a very promising college football player who is falsely accused of rape. is railroaded by the judicial system, is put in jail, and then is put on probation. But he can't get a job because now he is a felon. He can't go for job interviews at certain places because he has a certain parameter in which he must stay with that ankle bracelet on. So the being falsely accused and railroaded, it really has changed his life when it was very clear from the beginning that this kid was NFL bound. And the story is about this young man named Brian Banks, who's played by Aldis Hodge, who was one of the stars of the WGN America program Underground, along with Greg Kinnear, who plays a law professor. He runs one of these programs like they have up at Northwestern that work with law students about finding and exonerating people who have been falsely accused. That's what this movie is about, whether or not they can exonerate Brian Banks. So it's, you know, it's well done and well acted. It's a little bit cliched. It kind of felt like it should be an after-school movie, you know, that kind of feel to it. I wish it had been a little more engaging, but again, a harmless movie. Gave that one a Dean's List C as well.
Dean, I would guess that because of the emergence of the Me Too movement, there will probably be some people on that side saying that the timing of this movie is not too good. Do you know what I mean? Is that true?
Or very good. You know, it deals with someone who is falsely accused, but there is a subplot in this movie of a woman in the movie who was raped and never said anything. And only got the courage to say something later as she grew older, got some maturity. So, I mean, both sides of that argument of the falsely accused and somebody who was sexually assaulted, never said anything, and then finally got the courage to speak up, both sides are represented in the movie.
And again, give your Dean's List for
Dean's
Brian
List, C.
A C for
C
Brian Banks.
On this one, yeah.
One more to go, the one that I'm most excited about. It looks interesting
boy.
To me. I'm I have
boy.
A feeling this is not going to go well.
Boy.
The Kitchen.
Oh, boy. Stay out of the kitchen.
Oh, no. That's,
as my
Too many
mother
cooks?
Told me. As my mother told me so many times, stay out of the kitchen.
Yep. Well, you didn't listen to her, though.
I did not, thank goodness. Yes, Too Many Cooks in this kitchen. It's a story about three housewives who live in New York's Hell's Kitchen. All of their husbands are in the Irish mob, and all three of their husbands get tossed into the slammer. The three women, although they have no experience in being mob members, decide to take over the racketeering turfs of their husbands. If this, Bill, did you or Wendy, did you see wind up seeing the movie The Widows?
Widows last year,
no.
Yeah, really good, loved it.
Really good movie that did absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
this movie is all I could do was think of that movie while I was watching this one. Only this one is not as smart, not as well acted, not as well told as a story. This one is full of mob cliches. It's 100 times worse than this other movie that starred Liam Neeson and Viola Davis and just a host of other great characters.
Mm-hmm.
This one is just disappointment pretty much from start to finish.
Yeah.
What I found very interesting was that the few times that I was sort of emotionally compelled in this movie and began to somewhat get drawn into the story had to do with the characters that included Elizabeth Moss, who is one of the housewives, and is it Margot Wintendale? The actor? I'll look up the name. These are two amazing actresses, dramatic actresses,
yeah,
who are in this movie, as opposed to Melissa McCarthy and Tiffany Haddish, who are, you know, mostly comedians.
Sure.
And I'm sorry, they just did not connect. And it just made me feel like this movie was miscast. It made me feel like the story was sloppily put together.
Yeah.
I was greatly disappointed in this. Margot Martindale.
That's the name.
Is
the actress
who I'm thinking of. It's one of my favorite actresses. I'm sorry that I forgot her name, but she's a great actress. She plays the mother of one of the Irish mob guys that get thrown in jail, and it's a really interesting character that goes no place. Common is in the movie. Annabella Ciora is in the movie. Lots of very talented people who are wasted. And I wound up giving this Dean's List C-.
What if after all those flaws you would have said, Dean's List, A+. Loved everyone.
One of these times I'm going to do that to you. And that's when you'll know it's my last day.
Dean, thanks so much for your expertise. Always appreciate it, and we'll talk to you in a week.
Have a great weekend.
That's Dean Richards. Thanks, Dean. That's who that is.